Hello and welcome to the Care for the Family podcast with me, Mark Chester, Stephen Hayes.
Hi, Mark.
And Dave Gordon.
Hello, Mark.
Dave is our special guest today, and this is the Dad Cave, where we discuss fatherhood in its varying forms and unpack some of the things that often just don't get talked about. So, Dave, it's really good to have you in the Dad Cave. Welcome.
Thank you.
And tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is David Gordon. I'm married to Judith. I've got two sons, Andrew and Jonathan, and I work for Network Rail, and I don't know the times of your trains.
Yeah, I guess that's
you
probably your
You worked for Network Rail. You walked here today, didn't you?
After I got the train.
True.
But it was a long walk, wasn't it, from the station?
Well, it's about 3 miles, yeah.
Three miles.
Not too bad.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to kick it off with dad jokes, and we have pre-warned you, so I know you've come armed with a dad joke. So, and Dave, we're going to start with you.
Thank you.
Tell us your dad joke. Fire away.
So many people don't know this, but lions actually have a bit of an ego issue. So one day the lion woke up and he was feeling rather nervous. And he found the warthog and said, "Oi, ugly, who's the king of the jungle?" And the warthog looked, did you see how I looked that way? And the warthog said,
"Thanks for that."
You are mighty lion. He said, "Thank you, that's right." Carried on, still wasn't quite feeling 100%. Sees a giraffe. "Lanky, who's the king of the jungle?" And he says, "You are, oh keeper of the mighty mane." He says, "That's right, don't you forget it." He just needs a little bit more to push him over the edge. He sees an elephant and he says, "Nosy, who's the king of the jungle?" And the elephant looks at him and he cocks his head to one side and cocks his head to the other side. And he gets his trunk and he puts it round the body of the lion and bangs in between two trees for a couple of minutes and puts him down. And the lion's like this. He goes, "There's no need to get angry because you don't know the answer."
Wow. Oh, that Dave, that you were getting the official award for the longest dad joke we've ever had in the Dad Cave.
That was somewhere between kind of like
Thank
David
you.
Attenborough and Chris Rock. It's like the nature world meets just great comedy.
It was great though, because there were several funny points during the story as well, weren't there?
Yeah, I liked the that was my favourite part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mine's considerably shorter, but it is it? Animal related.
Is okay. it funny?
No.
Okay.
So here we go.
Okay.
How many tickles does it take to make an octopus laugh?
We don't know. How many tickles does it take to make an octopus laugh?
10 tickles. That wasn't awful.
Yeah.
Your response was pretty awful.
Yeah. It was kind of like a desperate but polite laugh, wasn't it? Yeah. We always analyse the dad jokes after we've shared
them.
It didn't feel
polite. It felt...
Didn't it? Oh, sorry.
It felt... petty and forced.
Yeah, I clearly didn't work hard enough. I'll work on that for the next one. So here's my joke. Okay, so two cannibals were eating a clown. One cannibal said to the other, "Does this taste funny to you?"
That's all right.
Yeah, I have to say, I've, and for those who are listening, you won't see this, but I've got a coaster here and it's got emergency dad jokes on it and I just took it off the coaster.
So if this episode goes horribly wrong, you can just do a...
Drop into another one.
A new segment of dad jokes.
That's true. Yeah, they're always there.
But why would it go badly? We've got a great guest.
We've got a fantastic guest.
You're reasonably entertaining, so...
Thank you. That's quite a compliment coming from you. Thank you. Anyway, let's get on with the topic, shall we? Because in this episode, we're talking about Dave's experience as a dad of two sporting children. Mm-hmm. And they're playing sport at a pretty good level, aren't they, Dave? So tell us what they do.
Yeah, so Andrew is a water polo player. If you don't know what water polo is, watch rugby and then imagine trying to get drowned at the same time. That pretty much captures that one. And he plays that at a regional level. Mm. And Jonathan also plays water polo at a regional level, but he also plays football for a Premier League team.
Can you tell us what Premier League team that is?
I can. It's Manchester United.
So I'm a Manchester United supporter. So
there's not a lot of support.
There's been a...
We should probably edit that.
Nah, there's been a... We're in the valley right now. The only upside is that people have stopped calling me a glory supporter, because for 26 years of my life, unbridled success, and now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've got the future to look forward to, because obviously Dave's son, Jonathan, could turn this around in the future.
So, true. So what position? Yeah.
Plays goalkeeper.
Okay.
He was initially spotted as an outfielder, so he went to two development activities initially. So one is an outfielder where he plays anywhere on the left, from left back, left wing, centre forward, centre left. And then one day it was raining and all the pitches were flooded, And so they were playing down at Goals in Chester, and he was playing in goal. And I think he was channeling the spirit of Gandalf, and because none shall pass.
Really?
And he just had his hands on the goal because the goals were quite low, and he was just stopping everything with his feet. And the scout, who knew him anyway, he was looking for my wife, Judith. It's like, oh, we need to get him to another one. And of course, they couldn't find Judith anywhere. And so found the coach and said, oh, Wayne, where's Judith? And he goes, oh, he's with his dad today. Who's his dad? And I was him, and he, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, goalkeepers turn
to the slightly. So if it hadn't rained, yeah, then that might not have been caught. Yeah. That's crazy.
I know. That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So where does their sport and talent come from, Dave? Is it from you or from Judith?
I who would know? Who would know? There's no good answer for me on that one, is there?
Right. You know. You're being modest.
Judith sounds like the safe answer.
Yeah.
So I think we've always encouraged them to be sporty and also, you know, to do their very best academically as well. And, you know, just to give them opportunities to try and see what they like. And if they enjoy it, we just sort of let them do it. Mm-hmm. But it's very much on the basis of, do you like it and do you want to carry on doing it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, they know I'm probably quite sporty, you know, and yeah. I do a bit of cycling and mountain climbing and whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're finding their own way in life as well.
Yeah. You are very sporty, aren't you? And I'm just wondering, you said that we've always encouraged them to be sporty as well. Why do you think it's been important for them as their dad, and why have you encouraged them to do sport?
Yeah. So for me, I think that sport is a great preparation for a lot of life, because, you know, you can get disappointments on a weekly basis. You can learn how to do things well repeatedly. You can learn how to practice things. You can understand that why it's important to be part of a team. Sometimes, you know, you need to do things by yourself. Sometimes you need to be sacrificing. And so there's just so many things that are really, really useful for the rest of life. And, you know, and typically, because they both play sports that are involved in leagues, you know, the win or the loss today is not the end of it. You know, there's still another 30 or 40 weeks. So, you know, we can pick ourselves up, we can regroup, we can carry on again.
Yeah.
So how did they find their things? Because I think, you know, there are a lot of kids who just wouldn't naturally stumble into water polo as a sport. I'm not even entirely sure I know what it is.
Well, I can send you links. You'll be horrified. So generally speaking. So with both of the boys, I wanted them to be able to do two things as soon as they could. One was to swim, because that can save your life, and one was to read, because that can save your life. And so I took Andrew swimming probably when he was about 9 months old, and he was a little prem baby, so there wasn't a lot of body fat keeping him warm. So at the end of it, you know, you'd be getting him a big hood wrapped up in a towel. And pretty much he's been in the water as much as he can since the age of, well, less than a year.
Really?
And so when it got to school, there was a teaching assistant whose husband used to be involved in the water polo club in Chester. And we have a little inter-schools water polo competition, which is largely kids not drowning, throwing a ball. You know, so it's not what you'd recognise as the sport that he now plays. But it just gives them an opportunity. And the better kids, or the, by better, I mean the ones that weren't drowning, sort of, we were invited to, you know, well, why don't you try and go to the club? And he'd never really been interested in any team sports at all. You know, he liked his Lego. He loved his reading. And so he went along, and then I want to go again. And then I think within 3 weeks, he was playing a game in Stoke, you know, at the age of 11.
So that natural aptitude just seemed to be there.
Well, he could swim, which is a big thing. And, you know, swimming is a fantastic skill set to have. And but there's a bit more than that. You know, he's sort of tuned into to what he needs to do and work as part of the team, and he just wanted to compete. So and they weren't very good, you know, to be honest. There was a lot of losing.
It sounds like the the base level requirement at that point is, are they drowning or not? Okay, let's give them a shot. Looking good.
We, you know, we like to have appropriate bars. You know,
It's fantastic, isn't it, how you can almost get involved in any sport, but it strikes me that some things need to come together. So a bit an opportunity and someone, a coach, someone who's passionate, you know, the passion rubs off onto onto children, young people, doesn't it? And also a bit of support, you know, from parents or whoever helps an awful lot, doesn't it, as well?
It does.
How do you, I'm just wondering how you, because you've got both boys, Andrew and Jonathan, both sporty. How do you balance the attention that you give their sports between you? Because it's, I know having two kids, it is difficult, isn't it, to make sure you're giving the same attention to both, particularly if one of their sports is more demanding than the other.
So I think, you know, with regard to the demanding nature. I mean, so Jonathan will be training four times a week. So that's four trips to at least Manchester, possibly further. And so, you know, that's an hour and a half in the car. So we normally split that. I do two and the wife does two. And that's just the way it is. But with water polo, I've always done that. So I've become a water polo official and a referee as well. You know, and just encouraging the children alongside with regard to various bits and bobs, you know, helping them develop and see different things. So
do you find that interesting?
It's awesome. It's brilliant. Yeah. You know, because you might have children that just, because you get to know them. And you know when they've had a bad day at school or whatever, yeah. And you know, and you just come on, let's get on with it, let's do this.
Mm. I love hearing you talk there about the fact that you've got involved in water polo yourself. I think that's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we are interested in what our children are interested in, aren't we?
Yeah.
That is the truth. I know, you know, in my family, football was, we grew up with, mm-hmm. steeped in football, family steeped in football, and that was the language that was used between the generations in our family. Mm. And then my son Billy suddenly decided, well, I'm not all that keen on football. I want to play golf instead. So I went off and played golf. So I took up golf at the same time and had lessons. And you know what? It's been so much joy just obviously spending time with him, but also learning a new sport is really satisfying, I've found. And so I always encourage parents to try and get involved if they can, as much as is appropriate, obviously, and dependent on what their children want them to do as well.
I think that's a really great, you know, a great piece of advice. You know, one of the best things that you can do is, I mean, you're investing in your children, you know, you're demonstrating that you want to be with them. But actually, you know, the majority of all sports is the desperate for volunteers, you know, and even if you're there and you're the chief cheerleader and, you know, you're just making sure that all the children turn up and that they all go home and they all leave with an adult, that's invaluable.
Yeah. I'm conscious as well, though, that getting involved in sport, you can quite easily start to become a bit of a coach as well as a parent.
Yeah.
And I'm conscious, say Jonathan at the United Academy.
Yeah.
You know, in previous work, I've been into a number of football academies, Premier League football academies, and I know that they're always working with the parents, almost to try and get them hands off a little bit, leave it to the coaches. But it's really tempting for the parents to analyze the game afterwards, to analyze their child's performance, to give them some hints and tips about how they could do better. I mean, how do you find that that's the case? It's tempting.
Yeah.
How do you avoid doing that kind of thing?
Good question. So my sample size is one, and it's Jonathan. And I'm thinking that the sample size of the Man U coaches is bigger than one. So they've got probably a lot more to say and see and do than I could ever say to him. And so what I've decided to do is I'm going to be a parent. Mm. And what I'm also going to do is try and be a friend to the other parents.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so the questions, I do ask Jonathan questions after every session. And there's only two. And it's, did you enjoy it? Do you want to go again? Mm. And that's it. Because if they're not enjoying it, you know, four times a week he's been doing that since he was seven. Mm. And, you know, he's 12. It's a long time before, if he makes it, and that's an if he makes it, long time before he ever actually plays with, you know, the official strip on.
But that's you having the self-awareness to know that there's people now in his life who can input better stuff into him. Because most guys would probably try and live out vicariously through some sort of like, I know football, I've done it. Whereas if you actually, you know, anyone screaming in the crowd, if you actually said, actually, what do you think we should do? They'd be like, I don't know, kick it.
But, you know, I hear what you say and I see that on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
You know, and you might know more about football and you probably do know a lot more about football than me, but these coaches aren't just coaching football. They're helping children grow up.
Yeah.
You know, so One of the other things is, you know, we don't really understand a lot about how boys develop mentally. We know they tend to be slightly slower than girls with regard to emotional development. Probably don't hit maturity to sometime after the age of 25. And so whatever's happening in their heads is happening at a slightly different rate of knots. So the coach is doing more than giving them skill on the pitch. They're actually trying to equip them for life.
Mm-hmm. I love what you just said a minute ago about asking questions. And I think that's a really helpful thing for anyone listening or watching this podcast, really, if they've got children who play sport at any mm-hmm. level, is that afterwards, I think questions are a really good way of helping mm-hmm. the child evaluate their own experience of sport, mm-hmm. rather than saying, well, you made a mistake there, or you should have done this, or next time you should be doing this. Just asking them questions. Just
non-loaded questions as well.
Non-loaded questions.
Do you think you should have saved that shot?
Yeah. I mean, you did lose the tournament, but do you think you should have saved it?
But you're right, Mark. You are.
But it is, you've got to be careful what questions you ask. Yeah. But I think just allowing the child to evaluate their own experience will help them even more on the sporting field anyway, mm-hmm. because out there, they're on their own. They've got to make their own decisions, take responsibility for their own actions. So you're helping them prepare for that.
Yeah.
But also they're not feeling that pressure from you as a parent. So I really love that sense of just, you've got two questions and you ask them every time.
Yeah.
I think it's,
One thing I'm interested by, because I'm thinking, for myself and perhaps people listening or watching, like quite a hard thing to get right, to get the balance right, is how much do you, and this takes it into a slightly broader place, but how much do you, when you see a natural aptitude for something in mm-hmm. your children, in this case, sport, but be it maths, music, mm-hmm. whatever it might be, from your experience as a father, how do you get that right to, they need a bit of pushing. Kids do need a bit of mm-hmm. Galvanizing, but then you also, we know there's extremes of that where it's like this overbearing, insufferable, like all-consuming thing. How do you find a middle ground in that? How much do you push your kids in the things that you think they're good at?
So Andrew, when he wanted to get into the regional team, there was tryouts for the regional team, and there were like three blocks of exercises that they were assessed in. There was swim speed, core strength, gameplay. And, his core strength was insane. I can't plank as long as either of my children. And you think, how on earth that happened? I couldn't play water polo. You know, when you go swimming, and you've probably got memories of maybe if you do swim, of going with your dad and you go on his shoulders and he'd give you a little bit of a swim round. If either of my sons got on my shoulders, I would drown. And I'm a pretty decent swimmer. So, we did swim down the River Dee at one point. But he didn't have the swim speed. And he was really disappointed because he didn't get in, and it was just all on swim speed. I said, okay, so we've got a choice here. I said, if you want to do that, you have to be able to swim faster. I said, that's not me saying that. That's what they say. I said, and if you want to get in and you want to swim faster, I will help you swim faster. And we will find ways of getting you to swim training so you can start doing that. I said, but I can't do the swim training for you. And so I think you tend to get a much better result if the child wants to do it. Now, I'm talking about a teenager, somebody who was right on the edge of, he was maybe 12, 13 at the time. So it's not like, you're talking to an 8-year-old or a 6-year-old. With Jonathan, there's just pretty much nothing, I mean, I can't get the ball off him if I tried now. My brother-in-law comes down from Scotland, give him the balls. He can kick balls at him for 40 minutes. He can't get a ball in the net. And it was just like, what on earth do I have to do? And I said, well, what you have to do is get him to look somewhere else, then kick the ball. That's the only way you're going to score. So that's kind of that. I mean, I've got a slightly different thing with Andrew at the moment, who's my oldest son. And he's doing Maths A level, and I did Maths A level. And he's been struggling a little bit with some of the subjects. And so I can tell you with authority, he has an integration test tomorrow. And I know that because I've been doing integration with him. Which might sound like an horrendous thing to many of the people listening.
Sounds horrendous to me.
So the difference in the 12-year-old to the 17-year-old is that he will work harder if I work next to him than he would if I didn't work next to him. But what he doesn't need me pointing out that everything's wrong, but he does need me to tell him when it is wrong. Just not to be overbearing on his shoulders, but to say, okay, well, how I don't think that's right. Why do you think I think that? And so, that sort of, because I'm trying to get them to the position where I won't be there. I'm not going to take the exam for him. I'm not going to be in the exam with him. Mm-hmm. So he's got to be able to do that himself. And, it's just a joy actually, because we're spending time together.
So that's almost applying that sporting mentality mm-hmm. into a subject that's
not sport.
Not sport. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering how you manage their expectations and your own expectations, really, because, you know, Andrew may one day, you know, love to play water polo nationally. Mm-hmm. Jonathan one day may love to play for Manchester United's first team, yeah. You know, make it into first team.
Well, he wants
squad.
To make it to England's first team. But
okay, sorry, I set the bar a bit low there, didn't I?
All right, Mark, steady on.
Yeah, he wants. Yeah, no disrespect to Manchester United, but he wants to play for England.
He does.
But that might happen.
Yes,
but it also might not.
Absolutely.
So, how do you manage their expectations?
So with Andrew, I mean, he's in that position where he's slightly more mature and he can start doing the equations in his head, as it were, that, you know, how much time am I prepared to commit to training? How much effort do I want to put in?
He's 17.
So he can work that out, you know. So one of his peers has played polo for England. Mm. And the amount of swimming he does is just exceptional. And he's a really, really fantastic swimmer. So top level polo players are just underneath our swimmers with regard to competing. That's how fast they can swim.
Wow.
You know, so the, and he's not there and he knows that, but he's enjoying life. Mm. And so he's moderating his own expectations. But if he was to say, well, I really want to go for this, I'd say, okay, well, let's sit down and make a plan, you know, because there's got to be a plan.
Yeah,
with Jonathan, and I think Manchester United are exceptional with that. We're just enjoying the ride. I think this year is going to start becoming a little bit more feisty. Mm. You know, so they've let three of the kids go. Mm. You know, and you can see, you know, like, I mean, he's met the likes of Marcus Rashford and everything. So when they train at Carrington, sometimes the first team come in, and it's really interesting because they see them and then they all go and leg it and they just get the photographs taken with them, and then they just want to play football with them. Suddenly it's not Marcus Rashford who plays for Manchester United, it's Marcus Rashford who's playing football with me. Mm. And that's it, you know, so that's what they want to do, and they want to play football more than just, you know, do any idol worship or anything like that.
Yeah.
So Jonathan is a slightly different mentality, and he's kind of assessing how much effort he needs to put in. But there's a load of changes, you know, you've got puberty and everything to go through. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they could grow, they could not grow. Yeah. You just don't know what's going to happen. And so it's just, with regard to the expectations, where do we go with that? What he needs to know is that I'm his dad, and I'm always his dad, and I love him, and I loved him before he played for Man U, and I love him if he doesn't play for Man U.
Yeah.
And so he knows that. And, you know, sometimes after a really heavy defeat, I'll just say, you know, Jonathan, I really love you. I said, oh, you know, and it, because it hurts.
Yeah.
I said, why do I love you? I said, because I'm Jonathan. I said, yeah, you're my Jonathan.
Yeah.
And that's it, you know, because we've got to go home. I'm still going to be his dad tomorrow, aren't I?
Yeah.
You know, I'm his dad on the wins and his, and the losses. Yeah. So.
And the reality is there's something like 10 to 12,000 kids in the youth football development setup at any one time. So that's the maths is pretty easy in this case. Like, there's only a small number who are going to reach that pinnacle. Yeah. So I think it's having that. Is he kind of aware of?
If he is, it's not because I've told him. I mean, he can read if he wants to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Manchester United has a slightly higher proportion of its first team that have come through the development centre than any other Premier League team.
Great club.
But not all of them do. And that's that.
Yeah.
You know, and at some point you're more than likely to get a conversation that goes, I don't think you're going to make it. And so actually then it's not just the resilience for coming back at, you know, after a bad game. It's like, well, what are we going to do now? You know, and they've been, it is tough, but, you know, they're kind of really good because they say, we want you involved in as many sports as possible. So before Christmas, he's 12, and this will sound bonkers, he was playing in a regional under 15s water polo tournament and he came third.
Blinking heck.
So, you know, these, you know, they're just athletes.
Yeah.
You know, there was one training session that we had at the cliff and they just put the balls away and they said, right, we're going to do running races. And they were just doing the most bonkers running races. It was like a crazy PE teacher taking the kids, and it was just the most competitive set of kids you'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But they sort of stopped being footballers and they just went back to being 9-year-olds.
Yeah. That's great.
Which is lovely, you know, because that's it, the children.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to jump in here.
I think you should.
Okay. Yeah. So every episode now, at the kind of just after the midway point, I ask a series of quickfire questions just to help us get to know our guests a little bit better.
Okay.
If there's any you literally can't answer, just say pass. But I want quickfire. If you have an answer, let's have it quickly. All right, okay. So here we go.
Pass.
We don't have a jingle yet, do we?
I think that was on your to-do list, Stephen,
right,
wasn't
next
it,
time.
The jingle?
All right, okay. Favourite James Bond?
Oh, Die Another Day.
Your favourite James Bond actor?
Daniel Craig.
Oasis or Blur?
Oasis.
Favourite Celine Dion song?
I'm struggling with that question, with favourite and Celine Dion being in the same question.
All right,
so
we'll move
I really apologise, so
your,
that's a pass.
Your least liked hooved animal?
Least liked hooved animal?
Yeah.
Oh, is that an okapi? I think they've got a hoof, have they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. Your favourite tipple?
I'm teetotal, so it'd have to be Ribena.
Ribena, nice. What would your last meal be if you were on death row?
Oh, decent steak.
Nice.
But I don't intend getting onto death row, incidentally, but I do intend on having a decent steak before.
And how'd you have it?
Medium rare.
Medium rare, nice.
Moyenne.
And then this is going to be a really difficult one. Favourite Spice Girl?
Oh, Sporty Spice.
There we go.
There we go.
That concludes our quick fire questions.
Fantastic. That is always a really entertaining part of the dad cave, that is, Stephen. Just repeat that question. Your least favourite
hooved animal.
Hooved animal.
Yeah.
And you came up with an answer to that. That is very impressive.
Most people don't have a preformed opinion on what hooved animals they like.
I didn't think they did, but then I was just beginning to think, is it just me? Do I need to start thinking about this just in case I'm asked that question?
I think you should probably think about it, Mark. Next time.
Wow. So let's get back to the topic, shall we?
I think we should. I think that's for the best. Yeah.
I'm just wondering how it's tempting, isn't it, when you become more successful at sport, whatever level you're at, to cut corners a little bit. There are temptations, maybe to cheat, maybe to maybe there's that win at all costs mentality that comes in. I know in sport as well, as people get older, there can be a real temptation of gambling, of gaming, because you're in that competitive sort of instinct. I'm just wondering how you cope with those sort of temptations and how you deal with that with the boys.
So, I mean, we just tend to talk about values with them. With Jonathan, because he's at Manchester, they talk about two toolkits. They talk about your skills and abilities on the pitch, and they talk about your character. And we do similar with Andrew as well. You know, so I spend a lot of time in the car with Andrew going to and from water polo. And we just talk about various things. And he's now doing politics as in at one of his other A-levels. And so we're obviously in a very interesting situation where it wasn't a party, it was a meeting. There was just no agenda. And so he's talking about those things. What about this, Dad? And it's interesting to hear him making conclusions. And so I think with my own dad, he wouldn't tell me what to think, but he would give me ways to think or alternatives to think about. So I tried to do that with Andrew, because I think he's a little bit like me in that sense. With Jonathan, back to Jonathan, I think he just seems to be quite a nice black and white character at the moment, you know, because he's young and those sort of things haven't happened yet. Yeah. But he knows already that you only get out what you get back, what you put in. So if you don't do the training, you're not going to be as good. If you don't, you know, so with swimming, I mean, that's the key one of polo. If you don't do the swim lengths, you don't have the speed, you can't make the length of the tournament. So they understand already those things. With regard to gambling, I don't know, I've not crossed that bridge yet.
Yeah.
It's just not part of our lives. You know, we didn't even have a tipple on the Grand National.
Yeah. 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 But that in itself, that's a good example, isn't it? And hopefully they'll follow those values that you've set. It strikes me as you're talking, though, that actually, you know, being a good dad is very similar to being a good sporting coach, really, in that, you know, you're not just telling them what to do, but you're actually helping them make their own decisions about things, helping them evaluate things, giving them a framework within which they can explore things on a sports field. Yeah. They're exploring their talent, their capabilities, they're exploring decision making, responsibility. And the same when you're having a conversation with them as a dad, you're helping them, you're coaching them through life almost, aren't you?
Yeah. I don't know how you think. I don't know what your relationships were like, you know, with your dads, and I think that can be quite formative for us, you know, what your dad was like, whether your dad was present or whatever. And so I think I was really quite lucky with my own dad. But I think to give them a safe space where they can explore things. And, you know, of course they go bad and you get the, you know, when they've had a bad day at school, and no, I don't want to put my bike away. And no, I'm not going to do the washing. All of those things happen, but it's just trying to be consistent and trying to say, no, the boundaries are the boundaries, you know. So we have one for Jonathan with his phone, you know, no phone after 8 o'clock. Now you might think that's a bit draconian. I don't.
Definitely not.
You know, but your children are three. So, but it's like, you know, no phone after 8 o'clock, because actually what you need to do now is you need to start thinking about sleep, because, you know, one of the best things you can do in life is sleep. Mm. You know, you can get a great sleep pattern that's going to set you up for life better than anything else, better than any exercise, just regular sleep. And as a sports person, you know, I mean, I train with some pretty decent cyclists, and sleep is the thing they all go back to. It's like, got to get your sleep right.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask something? So we're kind of coming into land now. For someone like me, or for anyone watching or listening who might have a child anywhere between, say, 3 and 10, if you see something in them, so for example, my daughter now goes to gymnastics. It's a little club. It would seem she's the strongest in the class. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just very, very capable, very willing to try things. But other people might have kids who suddenly, I don't know, take up guitar or show a particular interest in Lego, which could lead to like some sort of engineering, computing sort of. What advice would you give to dads who kind of see, oh yeah, they're kind of good at that. What do I do with that? Like, at what point do I think, yeah, I'm gonna take her to pursue this on the weekend as well as just it being something she's good at? Like, what would you say?
So, I mean, I think probably I never ended up in that situation. I was never really that pushy because other people did the identification for me.
Okay.
So I just became, you know, a taxi driver at one level. You know, I mean, that's the truth of the matter. Neither of them can drive. Apparently it's bad to let 12-year-olds drive a car. Don't get me
I've
wrong.
Heard that.
Yeah, he's quite keen on it. But I think what I've always done with mine is just if that's where they're investing time, you know, we like Lego in our house. We play with Lego. So I play with the Lego. I enjoy the Lego just as much as they do. And they'll remember that time. I remember that time when, you know, playing with Meccano with my dad.
Yeah.
If something becomes of it, then something happens, you know. So, you know, we talk about Jonathan because he plays football. But the truth of the matter is, you know, Andrew plays water polo. You probably can't name our water polo player in the country. And, you know, why would you? But he's doing an activity that he's enjoying. And that's what I'm really interested in, that he's doing something he's enjoying. He's found something and he's enjoying it. So I'm going to help him to enjoy that part of his life.
That's
and,
great.
You know, to give the opportunity. So, you know, if your daughter chooses to take up the guitar, then, you know, I'd be having the conversation and say, well, do you want to get better? Do you not want to get better? Do you just want to have fun? You know, and it's an inquiring sort of thing, as opposed to saying, right, okay, what you've got for the next 8 years is classical guitar lessons.
Yeah. That's really good advice.
Dave, what's the most fun about having two children who love their sport?
It was the most fun. We don't get any sleep anymore.
It's funny you ask that question. What's the most fun? Yeah. Your mind always goes to the things that aren't much fun.
Aren't much fun.
Yeah,
but it's knowing that there's a part of me inside them now, because there's a love for an activity that they want to do, and it's become theirs. It's not mine. It's theirs now, and that's nice to see. And, you know, more so with Andrew than Jonathan, you know, you can see him making his own decisions, and, you know, he's developed his own style of play, and that's just nice to see, you know, the man starting to mature. And but with Jonathan, we're not there yet. You know, we're looking at a young man enjoying himself and just working out what he can do.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of the dads of football, and he's played a little bit for a couple of clubs in some countries. And I was saying, you know, some of the other dads are saying, oh, I think my son's, you know, an aggressive midfielder. And he says, I didn't know what kind of midfielder I was till I was about 22.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, is he attacking? Is he defending midfielder? Yeah. You know, does he play off the bounce? You know, counter attack? How's he work?
Yeah.
They said, you're not going to know that at this age. They just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you say, the important thing is enjoy it. Have
just
fun.
Enjoy
at that
it.
Age.
Have fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We always ask guests in the guests in the podcast in the Dad Cave.
Yeah.
We always ask them about what they want to pass on to their children, and it might be an object, it might be a value, a passion, a hobby.
Yeah.
Now I know you're a man of faith, so you'll want to pass on your faith to your kids. But what else is there that you want to pass on to Andrew and Jonathan?
So, for those that are listening, I got asked this question last week and have been thinking about it ever since. And it's probably one of the trickier questions I've ever had to have an answer to. So, three things, actually.
More tricky than hoofed animal.
Yeah, hoofed animal. Whoa, that was tricky. Yeah. So it was reading and swimming. Those two things, I thought, would always be life-changing. And I think they're really important skills for any person to have, reading and swimming. And you're never too old to learn to read or swim. And so anybody that's listening, you can't do those two things well. I'd encourage you to go and do those. But the one thing, two more things. I want them to have my presence while I can give it to them. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be curious about life.
Yeah.
So that might just be because I'm an engineer and, you know, it's why? Why? So it's the curiousness about all things in life, because, you know, that generally leads to a deeper understanding.
Yeah. Fantastic. So we've asked you for one thing, you've slipped in four. I admire that. Brilliant.
Thank you.
But it's a lovely place to finish on. Yeah, so, Dave, you've been a fantastic guest. He's been brilliant, hasn't he?
Absolutely.
It's been a fascinating discussion.
Really great.
Thanks for joining us in the Dad Cave. We really appreciate it. And that was the Dad Cave. Thanks for listening and watching, and we hope you can join us next time.